All right, welcome everyone to another Wednesday evening here on peoplesinternetradio.com, and I'm also on PSN Radio, thanks to Angel Espino. We're on a American network too, I want to tell my guest. I forgot to mention earlier, but I want to welcome back a former guest I had on at least a year ago, maybe even closer to a year and a half ago. But he's an American lawyer up in the state of Washington, and we're going to talk about some things. I'm not sure what all the subject's going to be about tonight, but I want to welcome back Scott Stafney. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you, Stephen. It's always a pleasure to be on this second time. So
you're very welcome.
You know, it was interesting. You asked whether I wanted to come on, and you know, I have been taking a lot of things kind of on faith recently, and the fact that your audience is primarily in Europe was of interest to me, because a lot's going on here in America, which I don't think should be going on, but I'm wondering if it's going on across the world, and I'm wondering if we are going to be able to cancel the cabal. Given the name of your show, given the audience, and
well, you know, I originally thought, Scott, I didn't want to use the words kill or anything like that, so I thought maybe cancel was a good one.
I think cancel is a good one, and I think particularly in today's world, what's going on in Europe and particularly Greece is kind of a good one. What I want to talk about a little bit is debt and how the cabal uses debt to enslave the people of the world, not just Americans, and we are only now becoming more enslaved, but people all over the world. So the funny thing about debt is it's not real, and cash and currency is, it's not real clear how it developed. Economists would like to tell you it comes from the concept of barter. But if you go and you look back anthropomorphically, you find out that most societies or most communities did not barter amongst themselves. They were friends, and they would, in and amongst themselves, maybe give one another something. But where barter actually occurred was when you might have two villages that weren't on the greatest of terms would come together, and they would go through an elaborate ceremony, or not so elaborate ceremony, but they would barter back and forth. They'd give things back and forth between these communities or these tribes. When you go back and you try to find any community that was based on barter, you don't find that. What you do find is that the concept of money and debt appear to originate about the same time. And money is a way that you can quantify debt. And so that was more, at least in some of the books I've read, that was more of the reason for money. And of course, now today we've gotten to a world where we're not really even dealing in money. For example, in America, we deal with dollars, which are notes or debt owed to a private banking system, which I would conclude is part of the cabal that we'd like to cancel. And so what they do, it's really odd, is even though there's not enough money or actual currency or even these debt notes to handle debt, they still make more debt. And I know that because I do a lot of foreclosure law. And so what happens when you take out a loan is the bank creates debt. Now, what's really weird about this is at the time they create the debt, they know that there's not enough currency in the system to actually pay that debt off. So have you ever known of a bank that doesn't expect to be paid back?
Well, I've heard that the some of the top bankers have actually been interviewed, and they said if they were not allowed to charge interest, there wouldn't be any reason to be into banking. There wouldn't be any reason for a bank.
Well, and when you consider that there's not even enough currency to pay off the principal when they're making this new debt, it really doesn't make any sense, except when you understand that what these bankers are expecting to get back are those things that many feel were given to the men and women and the creatures of this planet when they were born here. They're in the United States, they call them in their Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, unalienable rights. So now what the bankers and the corporations are doing is they're making loans for money, which they know does not exist, and they are anticipating that the peoples of this world will pay them back in the resources that our Creator gave all of us. So now we see companies like Nestle taking water that has always been a free resource for most of the world for all of time, and now they're trying to sell it. It's only a matter of time before they'll probably start trying to sell us the air we breathe. And so that's part of the problem that we have, is that we have a very small group of people with wealth that are trying and have succeeded in creating a governments around the world that will look after that 1%'s claim to our planet and its infrastructure, as opposed to looking after the rights of we the people. When I was preparing to come on this show, I looked at some internet research regarding cabals and the evil nature and how they bring people together to control governments. And I ran into some interesting quotes. One quote is by Adam Smith, written in The Wealth of Nations in 1776. He says, "Civil government, so far as it is instituted for the security of property, is in reality instituted for the defense of the rich against the poor, or of those who have some property against those who have none at all." And so it's interesting in this to see that Smith talks about it being instituted for those to protect the rich against the poor, or for those who have some property against those who have none at all. And now what seems to be going on is those few people that do have some property, it's being systematically taken away from them here in America and throughout the rest of the world by this small group of people that are using the war machines of government to own what is rightfully the creatures of this planet. And so that's why I wanted to come on. I wanted to talk a little bit about the situation in Greece and the whole notion of debt. So we're not the first people, or the first time people have struggled with debt. In fact, throughout biblical times and throughout history, debt has become like an anchor or a burden on people to the point where it just gets canceled. The Jewish faith had a custom where after every 7 years and then after 49 years, all debt would be canceled. You know, it's interesting because even as I use the word cancel, I think of the word forgiven. You know, you forgive debt. Well, debt doesn't necessarily have to be forgiven. People don't necessarily haven't done anything wrong. I mean, when people are bamboozled into taking out debt or duped into doing it, is that something we want dragging down our world for the rest of existence? That's why the biblical concept of canceling debt makes so much sense. Should one generation be able to enslave the next?
Yeah, that's that's the big question that's on everyone's mind for the last decade or so, or it seems to be on everyone's mind with this so-called freedom movement or this liberty movement.
That's the main point of it. So when these concept of these natural rights were developed, and of course, since you a lot of your shows in Europe, you know, I'm not, there are different nations with different theories. But I think the notion of natural rights or God-given rights or rights bestowed by the Creator.
Common rights, yeah.
Yeah, those rights, when you have to purchase them, are no longer free. So what has happened is when we talk about the freedom to travel, fundamental right here, it hasn't always been a fundamental right, but when you talk about the right to travel, do you have any right to travel if you don't have any money to pay for a ticket or to buy gas? I mean, what is that right to travel? Or let's talk about freedom of speech. Do you really have freedom of speech in an age of noise? Or and when you're somewhere where you can't be heard. Where we are now is our societies have evolved to the state where money is what controls everything. And I think that's kind of what the Pope is talking about. Materialism, we've gotten to the point where nothing is judged by its own purpose. Everything seems to be judged by how much money it will make for one person or lose for another person. But the truth of the matter is, what we do is money is man-made and we're letting it substitute for the God-given gifts of the planet. And we do that at great cost. I mean, when you think about it, who would you rather have controlling your world? Someone who is made a lot of money and that's all they know how to do? Or say an artist, somebody who can take something from the world as it exists, put his soul and his art and his creativity in it and create something different. I mean, that has a value that's far beyond money. If you take all the dollar bills, let's say we take a billion or a trillion or $20 trillion bills, we grind them up and we try to eat them as food, we'll starve. We try to drink them as water, we'll be awfully thirsty. We try to use them as a way to grow plants, it won't work. So I think that where we are now is at a point where it's no longer that love of money is the root of all evil. We've arrived at a state where money is the root of all evil. And the reason it's the root of all evil is because it has floated to the top where it's become the most important commodity, and it has no value, intrinsic value in and of itself. It only has value as a medium of exchange, and the rich have it captured so high up that the rest of us can't use it as that medium of exchange. So there's no reason for us to want to continue on with this system that drags us all down, prevents us from exercising our freedom.
Yes, exactly. I believe there was a time, I couldn't really put a year on it or anything like that, but there was a time where people were self-sufficient and no one needed governments. No one needed kings. No one needed rulers. Like I said, that was a long, long time ago, but somebody got it in their head that they were a lot more special, or a lot more, they thought they were better than the so-called common people, Scott, and they wanted control, and they started taking it by force or taking it by deception.
Exactly. And I think it's interesting to kind of go back and think about those times, because at first, yeah, perhaps there wasn't a king. And then the problem, of course, would be that there would be one guy that's bigger or stronger or smarter, and he could take advantage of other people. And so that may have been how you got to the kings, because you got the bigger guy who could take control and through fear or whatever take control. Then you get to the point in history where they talk about the social compact, where the whole purpose of putting a government in place, or, and that could be a king, it could be a republic, but you institute a government to protect the people, so that the rule of law makes it so that not everybody is getting run over. You might have the king who's a lousy guy, but at least most of the people can feel somewhat secure. And that in the French Revolution and during the American Revolution, that was the concept. The concept was the people are sovereign, and we only give power to the government so that they can respect the people's sovereignty and allow for the people to exercise their God-given rights.
Yes,
then, go ahead.
But hasn't that been a fallacy from day one? Hasn't that been a illusion since day one?
Most likely, yes. And, you know, so let's, you know, and I got to apologize because I know more about American history because I've studied it. But let's talk about it kind of in the context of American law. And I'm reading up on more European law and how juries are handled in Europe. But so in America, the notion was we would have three branches of government. And those branches would fight among themselves for power, and by dividing power, keep power in the people. And we would have state governments and federal governments. And again, it was a division of power. The notion was that if you divided power up, it would fight against one another, and it could be controlled by the people. Of course, that doesn't work when money rises to the top, because money buys all three branches of government and the federalist structure of the government. But so let's talk about in America, we were supposed to have a court system, and there were two types of constitutional offices. There were the judges and there were the jurors. Now, the court system in America has, either by design or by takeover, become the branch of the government that determines what the ultimate meaning of the law is. It doesn't really matter what the legislature says. If the court says it means something else, the court rules. However, as it was contemplated by our founders, juries, which were created from the common among us, were the ones who kept the courts in check. The courts were not contemplated to be the final check. In fact, Thomas Jefferson said that a jury is the only way by which you can hold a country to its constitution. And so what has happened is, little by little, and then by greater step and by greater step, the courts in America have taken over all of the government, and now we kind of have an oligarchy. Do you have that that piece I wrote on the scorched earth litigation model available? Is that something you can put on the screen?
Yes, absolutely. I also put it in the chat room there a few minutes ago, so people have been going to it and looking through it, and the other two links also. But
okay, so in the what happens here in America is, and it happened in distinct periods of time, but the notion was you had a judicial branch of government, and you had judges and you had juries. And a jury was a specific attempt by our American founders to make sure that there was a democratic element in our courts. So it didn't take long for the courts to want to eliminate juries. And by the 1970s, when I was growing up in a place called Bettendorf, Iowa, they were starting to teach the gospel to judges that if a case had to go to a jury, the judge hadn't done his job. He should make everyone see that the benefits of a settlement. By today's world, we have judges not even attempting to have cases settle. They just decide them on their own belief system. In America, it's hard to believe, but in America today, a judge gets to throw a case out of court based on whether it's plausible to her or him. How we got here to where we have less than 0.5% of our cases tried to a jury is not really a mystery. I think I explain it pretty well in the scorched earth litigation model. What happens is that, let's take the foreclosures as kind of an example. So our banking system and our corporate system and the people who are wanting to become nouveau riche at the expense of our middle class will spend whatever it takes to evict and remove a homeowner from their home. So I've seen cases where they will spend much more than a house is worth in order to take over that house. Now, how do they do that? They will file motion after motion after motion, even after the deadline passed. So you, if you're the attorney on the other side, you're saying, hey, court, look, the deadline's passed here. They can't file this motion. And the court will ignore you many times. Sometimes it might not. But the point of it is the banks, which have trillions of dollars at stake, don't care about outspending any homeowner a million to one. And they will do it. Yes. I've seen them do it. And I call it the scorched earth litigation model. But they will go even further. They will go to the point where they will spend money and they will enlist the help of different parts of the empire. And when I say empire, I'm referring to what people might call the United States of America, which I don't think of as a nation state anymore, but they will enlist parts of the empire to crush an advocate for the people. For example, I was on a show recently last Sunday where a lawyer, not quite as old as me, oftentimes you don't find them quite as old as me, but had been around for a long time, 20, 30 years. And like me, his sense of justice, he got antennae for justice, and you could see that this system was corrupt and wasn't working. And so he got into it. And then they sanctioned him for arguing that the homeowners should be entitled to have a production of the note which they claim is owed and which they claim is the basis for them taking the house. And there had been a decision in his home state, Minnesota, which is where my dad grew up, who was a lawyer, and there had been a decision in some non-disclosure or non-judicial foreclosure cases which had held you don't get necessarily to see the note in a non-judicial foreclosure. But he wasn't bringing non-judicial foreclosures. He was bringing quiet title actions. And the two aren't exactly on point. And, you know, in our system and in the British system and in civil, in common law systems, you get to argue your point up until you get to argue it to the highest court, and when they have decided that point, then it can be argued that arguing that same point is frivolous, except when you look at the United States Supreme Court, they keep changing their minds, so it's hard to argue that anything's frivolous. So in any event, this guy who had been around for 20, 30 years practicing law, when he smelled something rotten in Denmark, which was in this case Minnesota, he started bringing these lawsuits. And the court said, we don't want to hear lawsuits from homeowners against banks. And so I've got a little experience myself. I haven't been sanctioned yet, but I'm certainly getting threatened with it. I've got an attorney general that has no complaints from any of my clients, and yet he seems to want to go after our firm and put it out of business. And it's all a part of the scorched earth litigation model that is engaged in by the banks and by the people who they seem to who seem to listen to them, which are the courts. And so to me, what it seems to me like what we're seeing is, when I was a kid, growing up in the 60s and part of the 70s, we would look at the Soviet Union and we would look at China, and we would see these legal systems, and we would know ours was better because you had a chance to go to a jury. You had a chance to go to talk to someone like you and make your case. And I know my dad, who has argued in those kind of cases, I mean, the lawyers felt like they were a fourth branch of government. And they believed they were a part of a system of justice. And that doesn't happen anymore. When you remove the jury, when you remove the ability of the people to speak to the people, and under our system, we are the sovereigns. when you remove the ability of one sovereign to speak directly to another, you take away a lot. And so I told you about those, the quotes I was reading when I was getting ready for coming on your show, Cancel the Cabal. One of them comes from George Orwell. And I'll read it now because it kind of explains what I'm saying about the American courts, which are totally controlled by money. A society becomes totalitarian when its structure becomes flagrantly artificial. That is when its ruling class has lost its function, but succeeds in clinging to power by force or fraud. And that's so apropos when you think about American courts. I assume that everyone around the world has the same experience with what we call robo-signed or fraudulent mortgages and notes.
Probably so. I believe you're referring to the MERS scandal, right?
Well, not just the MERS scandal. What happened was a lot of these notes got destroyed, and so they can't find the notes and they make them up. MERS is definitely a part of the scandal. What happened was let's go back in time before we, America's been an empire for a long time, but before it got to this point where money controls all. So if you were buying a house from your neighborhood bank, you would take out a loan. They would actually give you the money and you would sign the paper and they would keep the deed in their vault. So what happened over time is the federal government took, I think, way too much of state sovereignty, and they allowed deeds to be securitized so that it's not one entity owning the rights to payments and then the right to foreclose, but a whole bunch of different people, and it's more like a security. And so we had a lot of our investment class investing in these things. In fact,
hang on, Scott. I got a question for you. Isn't it more the state representative and the state leaders, all of the states at that particular time, more or less give the power to the federal government, in effect?
Yes and no. I mean, the way it's supposed to be is the Constitution gives enumerated powers to the federal government. Those powers which are not given to the federal government are reserved to the states and to the people. Now, the courts have expanded enumerated powers. But when we get to an area involving the dispossession of a state's land, you're in kind of a very special area. Because when you talk about sovereignty, one of the most basic aspects of sovereignty is the land within a state's borders, whether it be a nation state or a state of the United States or of the empire. So when you get to who gets to decide what happens to that land, if it's not for an enumerated purpose, it's a matter of core state sovereignty. I can give an example. As an empire, the federal government may well have an interest in protecting the environment. And so it may well have an interest in ensuring that there's a uniform ecological or environmental regime. However, it does not have an interest in determining how a state decides title of its property should pass, or if it should pass. I can give you a good example, because it's a clear one. States sometimes enact law that say that their citizens cannot give any state property to the federal government. Federal government has fought that since probably day one. And the Supreme Court, up until the latest time it ruled on it in 1959, has said, no, that's right. The state gets to control the dispossession of its property. And that's still good law, I believe. But so when the feds came in and they took over the and said that the states no longer controlled the banking, when they started federalizing the whole mortgage industry and they started doing away with those checks which were placed on protection of ordinary people's property, their homes, they moved into these state enclaves, and then these federal courts, like this poor lawyer. Now, he's not a poor lawyer. I consider him a hero. This hero who fought against the federal government getting into these matters. Why is the federal government deciding what is the meaning of state laws in an area of core state sovereignty? It doesn't make sense. But the reason, of course, it's happening is because money pretty much controls. I mean, so let's look at the adversary system. We have that here. We have that in England, Ireland, all the common law countries. The way it's supposed to work is you have two advocates, two adversaries that appear before a neutral judge and jury, if it's really being followed, and they get to make their points. Well, the problem starts if there's only one advocate. So if you got somebody who can't afford a competent advocate, you kind of run the risk, and it's a very real risk, that the system won't work. And it's because that judge is up there who's making decisions with regard to legal matters is supposed to adopt the argument of one of the advocates. Well, if there's only one advocate making an argument, the judge is kind of stuck under the adversarial system of government. So if in a case, let's go to these foreclosures, if a bank comes in and they make motion after motion after motion after motion after motion after motion, and the lawyer can no longer afford to feed his family, and the judge has to hear all these things, they're going to eventually win, and that will eventually become precedent.
Scott.
So go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to add something in there. I thought you was getting ready to take a breath there, but
I don't breathe a whole lot. Go ahead.
Not too much, anyways. Sorry for the interruption, but I believe there was a time that people could represent themselves. I think that's what the actual word is meaning when you represent it. It means that you're represented by someone else because maybe you are incapacitated or you did not have the particular knowledge to present your own case.
And I 100% agree with you. I think that...
And then there was a time that they sort of changed everything. They changed the rules on us, and we are no longer allowed to present our own case anymore. We have to have a representative or a...
Well, I think
solicitor.
You may be wrong on that. I think the way it works is people are allowed to represent themselves. And, of course, if they don't have the knowledge to do so adequately, they're at a disadvantage.
Yes.
What has happened is they have made it so that only lawyers can represent people in court.
That's what I mean.
Okay, and that's one of the biggest travesties of
exactly
justice around. Because in the field I'm in, you know, lawyers don't have the time to actually spend the years it takes to learn this law. who know, the people who know this law a lot of times best are people who are not lawyers. They're laymen, but they have studied it. And there's no reason why you want a lawyer doing it if someone else knows the law better. And I am here to tell you, in many cases, that is exactly the situation. I know people that are really conversant with what we call our uniform commercial code. They know it far better than me. I'm happy to have them start the brief, and I would be happy to see them represent people, because it's better to have someone there. If you're going to have an incompetent lawyer there, or a lawyer that doesn't have time to develop competence, and you've got someone who does have competence, why don't you allow them to be there? But again, this is the monetization of our court system. I mean, it's all about money. So as you know, we've got this case called Citizens United, which allows rich people to put money into the political system, which, you know, is, I understand why people don't like the rich people taking over our political system. But at least you got more than one rich person. You got a few of them. I mean, in the court system, you yep. don't have that.
But they're all on the same side, though.
You got the real rich against the real poor.
Yeah.
And there's no way of winning.
All the rich people are on the same side, though.
I would agree with you. I think one of the things my dad might roll over in his grave, but I think he would understand if he were here now. He was a lifelong Republican, but neither the Republican or the Democratic parties serve the interests of the people of America. They are each shills to the rich. I mean, it's been so long since we in America have seen anything even vaguely similar to those notions with which we were conceived. I mean, America is obviously an empire. It's an empire in the sense that it doesn't just have its own body of land. It has protectorates. It's got bases around the world. It has long since given up and rebuked the notion that the people are sovereign. I mean, as far back as the Tuskegee experiment, when they purposely injected black folks with syphilis so they could watch what was going on.
Yeah.
And then they're still
mainly,
experimenting on us. And they're still, I mean, if you listen to some of the stuff that that Snowden has released, I mean, you see that these are not people that consider us their employers.
No.
These are people that consider us as problematic. They forget that we as people are our self resources.
Yes.
They view us as consumers, and consumers that only have value when we can pay them for the things that God has given to us.
That's right.
I mean, it's way out of kilter, and
yeah.
I think it's out of kilter across the world. That's why
it certainly is.
I came to talk on your show. That's why I took it as kind of a sign that I should accept your invitation, even though it was kind of spur of the moment and whatever. I think that we as people have more to gain by talking together and over the heads of our government than we do by talking to them.
Yeah.
It's time for a spiritual awakening of societal conscience. And that's something that the government won't understand, because it has no conscience and it has no idea of what a spiritual awakening looks like. Neither do the bankers.
Well, they actually do. And it's been happening for over 100 years now. And it is, for most part of the reason why we are being attacked in your, well, your scorched earth litigation model. It's, well, I mentioned to you just before the, just before we started, scorched earth litigation model looks very much like the military model of full spectrum dominance, where they attack on every single degree of the 360 degrees of the circle. I wanted to, first I wanted to pass something to you in the Skype chat there. Wanted you to take a look at it.
And I don't have all my Skype up, so why don't you just read it to me?
Well, okay. I will hold it up for the people that are going to see the video, and you can look at it later, and I will
okay, well, pass see. Hold on. Maybe I can just, I had those quotes. All right, so now
but
I'm in
it
Skype.
Is, okay, I just passed it to you in the Skype there, and I will hold it up for the people. I've already showed a on the screen once, but it's a dollar bill I took a black magic marker to, and I wrote on the back of it. It was meant to be a joke, but it's not really a joke. It's more like a ironic truth. But it says, "People of the world, I am your king, your lord, and your master. I rule you, you worship me, I own you." And it's just a simple dollar bill I did this to. And I put that out on Facebook, and I got lots of good comments. I only got one negative comment from a woman that's she's a little bit off and odd, but she doesn't think it's true. And I do believe.
I think you're. It's entirely right, and I think you are also right. The time has come. I mean, we have a Pope who's talking about it. We have all of us talking about it. What we have to do now is we have to unite. We have to come together spiritually. I was talking to a lady last night who had contacted me over Facebook, and she was losing her home, and she had had an accident, workers comp, and but in any event, she said, "I've always paid my bills, and now I can't pay my bills. I'm disabled. They're going to kick me out of my house." And she talked about being so ashamed. And I talked to this other lady who was a grandmother. Her husband had died, and he had been a very prominent individual in this area. And they were getting ready to take her house. And, you know, I'm thinking, like, you're taking from us, the middle class. And these are just these nouveau riche investors, or these old bankers, or these Jamie Dimons, people that I think are the scum of the earth and should be humiliated. And I think what we need to do is we need to come together, and we need to share our experiences, and so that we realize that it's not us that should be ashamed. It is those people. And we should make them feel ashamed, if not afraid, because they are evil. These banks that we now have to deal with are just outright evil, and the governments that support them are outright evil. It is time to cancel the cabal. It is time to cancel debt. We need to free the people of the world so that we can get on with making a more godly planet.
Absolutely. And there's something else I want to touch upon too, while I got a few seconds here. I was reading part of your blog there, the Scorched Earth litigation model, and there was one part in here where you sort of touched on it. You say, "I have personally seen this multi-billion-dollar industry spend more in litigation costs than the worth of the houses that are foreclosing on." And I thought to myself, there's two reasons why they are doing that. One is to get the land, and I know a lot of people don't actually believe it, but it's illegal for a bank to own land. But it was also illegal at one time for a lawyer to be a representative or a senator to go into government and to represent the people until they amended the 13th Amendment and then I did away with that. But yeah, the first reason is to get the land from the people. And the second reason is just for simply control.
Right. They so I'm kind of with you. I think that, so we've had 15 million people put out of their homes by these banks and our courts and the empire. And what do you think happens to someone in Minnesota or Michigan where you live, or they've got climates like London or, you know, in the Northern Europe. What do you think happens to a family of four that gets evicted into the elements in the middle of winter?
Well, I know a lot of them, and I was going to bring this up since we are talking about it. I think we could talk for just a couple of minutes and then take a short break and then come back and discuss some more if you would like.
You know, I'm going to have to go because I've got to get home. But I do want to talk a little bit about that because it brings up for me the question of, again, and I talked about it earlier, conscience.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering in, you know, we often take the, we often say that the German society during Hitler, what was wrong with them? And, you know, basically, as I understand it, not everybody knew that people were being exterminated. They would play on movie theaters, show people waving, and they're saying they're going off to a good farm. But whatever, I mean, they did know that something was happening. So that, I think the estimates are 6 million people. We've got 15 million people that have been thrown out to the streets. And, you know, we spend billions of dollars doing research on mundane subjects like the reproductive rituals of moths. And yet, who's looked at what's happened to these people? That's an incredible amount of people. So I brought this up in response to what you were saying. Why are they doing this? You know, there are some that believe in this. I think it's now called Agenda 2030 or was Agenda 21.
Agenda 21, yes.
Yeah, a lot of people, a lot of the wealthy people don't want to share this planet, is my view. My view is that what is going on here is evil. And I think that it's time we as the world's people started to see the evil. And we started to face down these banks and we started to say, no, no more of this money crap. We're not going to let money be our God. And you're not going to be able to make us. And the only way it's going to start, and I believe this with all my heart, is by the people first speaking out. When you call the empire of the United States evil, or you call its court system evil, or you call your own rulers evil, they can do one of two things. They can double down and they can show you just how evil they are. Or they can look at themselves and say, do we really want to do this? And I can give you two examples. There was in Russia where they brought the flowers up to the tanks and the government stood down. And
that was China, wasn't it?
In America with the fall of the Soviet Union. And then there was when FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, couldn't get the rulings he wanted out of the court, he threatened to pack the court. You see, these folks that abuse us and want to make us our slaves, they need us because we are the only thing that gives them legitimacy. And when we take that away, when we say, no, you're not legitimate, we don't believe in you, we believe you are evil, we have a power that we need to exploit. And the time has come for us to do it.
Yes, I've said that quite a few times over the 31 months I've been doing this, Scott. If we stop feeding this beast and get out of this system and ignore these people, they will become irrelevant within 6 months. But there's two things I wanted to introduce to you. Have you ever heard of Mike Montagna? He has this system that he calls mathematically perfected economy.
No, I'd love to hear about it.
Okay.
What is it?
Well, I can send you information on it after. You can research tonight or tomorrow or whatever. But there's also another term, another system that a lot of people don't know about. Our network here is helping hundreds of people over in Ireland, Scotland, and the UK and elsewhere save their homes. They are staying in their homes and they're doing it without the courts. They didn't really have a term for it, but they have coined a term, and it's called the official offer. I know for a fact that this is probably a true and effective system. I went through a bankruptcy 11 years ago in 2004, and my bankruptcy lawyer told me if I wanted to save some of the things, you know, my truck, my this, that, and the other thing that I had payments on, I could make small payments on it each month and show intent and keep these things without being foreclosed on. But he more or less withheld the information on someone's mortgage. They can also do that too. They can make a smaller amount and show the court that you have intent and stay in your home. And people in Europe are doing this. People in America don't really know about it. That's one of the things I would like to introduce.
Well, there is I was on another radio show like last Sunday called The Foreclosure Hour by a very
yes.
well-known and well-regarded lawyer, Gary Dubin. And he has some proposals that they're going to be dropping into the Hawaii legislature, and hopefully we'll see those same proposals in the Washington legislature, which will change a lot of the ways we do things. For example, it is possible to have a mortgage or a deed of trust that doesn't have a foreclosure mechanism at all. And my ultimate goal would be to find a way to get rid of money, because I don't think we need to incentivize people to work.
No.
I mean, I think a lot of people just like working.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of one of those type people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, find my purpose in my purpose, and I would go against everything I stand for now if I let money be my central purpose for doing what I do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, people need to scrutinize their lives, Scott, and they need to look at themselves and ask themselves what they actually need to exist. And, you know, whether it's all these flashy, fancy luxuries, or whether they just want to live a peaceful existence. And you really want to get down to it. And there are people doing this today. They live off the grid. I mean, okay, let's just make a joke about it, like a lot of people do. And they live out in the woods, and they live a meager existence.
I live out on a mountain.
Yeah,
so
well.
I understand.
But I tell you, these people have peaceful lives. They don't have stress. They don't have bills. They have access to fresh water and good food and fresh air, and frankly they don't have the problems that we do.
No, but what we need to do is change the world so that it's the economic disparity is gone. We need to all share in this world, and we need to indulge all people's ways of life so long as they don't harm someone else's. But right now, there's no way that we could conceive of that the 1% holding of, you know, 98%, 95%, even 90% of the world doesn't harm us all. I mean, the sad truth is, in the year 2015, we all need money because that's what we have evolved to. And the poor person who has to pay money to get money from a bank machine, I mean, that's immoral.
Yeah.
I mean, and we can stop this by speaking our truth and telling these folks, you are evil and we are not going to tolerate this. You need to be shamed. We don't admire you. I mean, these people that are the 1%, they get a high from it. They're sociopathic, most of them. We can't make them gods. We need to recognize them for the scum they are.
A lot of people have put them on pedestals and made them gods.
Yes, and forget that. I mean, we need to understand that there is right and wrong. I make one last comment. You know, in America, the empire is very concerned about educating its people or its slaves or its indentured servants to be able to work for the 1% and the corporation. So they've designed an educational model that teaches people how to work, not how to be a citizen, not how to evaluate policy choices, not how to vote. So they have this system now of learning called Common Core.
Yes.
And in this system of learning, under their mathematics program, they teach people that 2 + 2 does not have to equal 4.
Yeah.
Doesn't equal 4. You're not wrong if you conclude 2 + 2 = 5. So why do they do that?
The 1984 model, you mean, right?
Well, if that means that they want people to know that there's no right or wrong, just believe us.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Exactly, yes.
I mean, we need to know what we know, stand up for what we know, and speak our truth.
Yep.
And that's the only way. And we have to understand that, you know, throughout history, there have been times of oppression, and the thing that has saved the people has often been the conscience of the people, the collective conscience. You can call it spirituality, you can call it religion, or you can call it just that.
Yep.
There's a collective conscience, and we know as a people what's right and what's wrong.
Absolutely.
For a lot of things.
Absolutely.
Well, Stephen, I'm going to have to take off, but it's been a pleasure. I want to thank you for allowing me on your show. I'd love to be on your show. And next time, if we can do it in a way and I can figure out my computer better, I'd love to have an interchange where I can ask the people over there questions and they can ask me questions.
Absolutely. I'll just send you the link for the network then again, and next time you click on it you can sign up for the network, and you will be immediately brought into the chat and you can see all the questions. You can ask for questions. You know, I could have asked for questions, but we were going so good there, I didn't even need to.
Next time, let's do ask for questions, because things that I'm really interested in is what would a world without money look like?
Yeah.
You know, I'm old. You know, so, and I've never seen anything, but I know there are people out there that are thinking about that. How can we grow a worldwide spiritual movement?
Go ahead. I've got a pretty good idea what it would look like. There wouldn't be the greed that we have now, I don't believe. I could be possibly wrong there.
I think you're absolutely right.
People would be helping people.
When purpose becomes its own purpose,
yeah.
then you don't reduce it down.
Make it
something it's not. It is what it is.
There would be community gardens. People would help each other grow their food.
Absolutely.
Gather their own fresh water. There would be a lot more community activities.
I represent a church. I'm the church advocate for a group called Church of the Gardens, and it's new and it's growing, but that's what it does. But what it also does is it looks at the things like foreclosure. It looks at like where the government is taking away people's kids. It looks at the criminal system.
Yeah.
Where there, and it invites people to look at what is, to observe it, and make their own conclusion.
Absolutely,
it's hard to believe that they can't conclude that this is all corrupt.
Yeah, I had a good idea today, and it was actually last night after talking to you, and I think someone should start a new religion. Maybe I will. Who knows? But this religion is going to be based on the fact that we don't believe in government and we don't believe in money, and they virtually couldn't touch us legally, could they?
They do what they want.
Yeah.
I mean, when you study, and I've studied it a fair amount. When you look at how the Supreme Court has interpreted freedom of religion. They're all over the board. One minute they say one thing, then they overrule themselves and say something else, and then Congress comes in and does something else. So it really makes you wonder where the Supreme Court has said in one case that freedom of religion must be respected except where there is a compelling state interest and unless the law is narrowly tailored. And then they reverse themselves, but then Congress and the president come in and say, no, you were right the first time. Why should we give the court the right to just keep changing its mind?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
What's so special about these nine old people? And it, from what I can tell...
They serve the criminal organization. That's what's so special.
the other thing, though, is... I mean, the notion in our Constitution was that the court's judgment, okay, well, when the court issues a judgment, why did they get to change their mind? And how does that tie in with the notion of judicial review?
Yeah.
You know, it's when you think about it, religion is a powerful legal tool.
Yes, it is.
Only when it is used legitimately and spiritually, because what the cabal has tried to do is they've tried to marginalize people of faith.
Yeah.
They've tried to marginalize spiritual notions, and they say, oh, it's all about tax advantages.
Yeah.
They don't get that we see that they are evil.
That's right.
And it's not about taxes. It's about them.
Yep.
They need to go.
I just heard it on the way back from dinner, you know, hour and a half ago, Scott. My stepdad had NPR on, and the radio station on his truck there. And there was some sort of he was a pastor or a minister somewhere. And I'm sure it's going to be popping up here in the news very, very shortly. But I think it was today that he was told by some local municipality or state government or something that he was not allowed to say that homosexuality was bad and a sin anymore. So they're going to start attacking that. And I ended up telling my stepdad that, way back then, way back when, I don't even know what year it was now, but when the church made the agreement with the government not to talk about politics in the sermons in that, they virtually made it illegal with the...
Actually, they didn't. So the way it works is you can be a 501c3 charity, and a lot of churches are, and if you sign up for that, you get certain tax benefits. And but you, as signing up for that, you agree to waive your right to endorse candidates, and you agree to waive your right to promote legislation.
Isn't that just semantics, though?
Excuse me?
Isn't that just semantics?
No, because there is such a thing as a free church, which is the church that I talked about that I'm involved with, and it has the right, full right of free speech. And so one of the things, like with regard to Citizens United, that a lot of people don't understand that could be beneficial, is Citizens United involved a charity, a 501c3. And they took money from a for-profit corporation, and the Supreme Court said, well, we don't want to get into interpreting, when you can have free speech and when you can't, so we won't do it.
Yeah.
So that's very powerful language when somebody comes in and says, hey, we're not a charity, we're a church. And churches were, the American Revolution was in large part, it was the churches that gave the colonists the moral imperative to revolt.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always been in times of oppression like this. Yep.
The pastors and ministers.
People have come together.
The pastors and ministers led the charge. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Well, Stephen, I'm going to thank you very, very much, and I look forward to speaking, hopefully, with more people so we can have more of a dialogue and we can figure out how we can affect change about the world.
Absolutely. Well, after you hang up here, you will probably be able to figure out how to get the little links that I sent to you, and I'm actually going to send you a couple more and then write a little message to you, so hopefully we can talk again here very, very soon about all of these things that I'm passing you.
Sure. I'm probably going to just take off when I hang up here.
Absolutely.
Because I'm late for dinner.
That's fine.
But I will look at it, and as you know, I'm pretty easy to get a hold of, so you can contact me on Facebook or by phone or
call
whatever.
Your office,
but we will talk again.
Okay. Well, thank you once again, Scott.
Thank you very, very much, and I...
have a good dinner.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, everyone. I'm going to put a couple songs in. I know we didn't take a break there at the hour, but I'll give you about 11 minutes here to go put a pot of tea on and take a nice little break. Everyone, I'll be right back.